Welcome to the Gamers Inn. Come on in, pull up a chair next to the fire. It looks like you've had a long journey. I'm your host, Jocelyn, and joining me, as always, is my co-host, Ryan. Hey, Ryan, how are things this week?
Pretty good, but I wanted to take this time to form an apology for the last couple episodes that we've had. I mean, I've acted out of turn, I think. The internet has kind of given me some heat lately. I just wanted to say sorry. I've been a bit of a Nintendo fanboy lately, so, you know, I'm not talking about last week's episode where we sort of had this weird conversation about sexism. That's not what I'm apologizing for, but...
Are you sure?
Yeah, people were telling me I need to go on an apology stream, and I got the message. I'm going to try to talk about Nintendo less.
I see. Well, I don't mind when you talk about Nintendo, because then I can just laugh at you.
Exactly. So. Wait, that's not very funny.
But in terms of our talk last week, I've actually gotten some good feedback on that. People seem to like the way we handled a delicate topic.
Oh, really?
Especially with... Oh, my God. I was almost on the floor laughing again when I heard the outtakes at the end. And just, with the whole show cutting out with you just going, "I'm not sexist." I was like, oh, my God.
Well, it's funny because...
That's perfect.
Any guy who talks about feminism... it sort of comes off as sexist, because how I got a message from somebody from Autograph Cat, and he wasn't giving me a hard time. He was just saying, like, maybe it's different in Canada where it's not quite as needed, and I think that's true. But I was gonna tweet him back and say, like, you know, I don't claim to be an expert in feminism or activism for that reason, or even being a woman. I mean,
you're not an expert in being a woman, Ryan.
No, I mean, I've seen Tootsie a few times, but Saturdays. Yeah, Saturdays is when I have my weekly viewing of Tootsie and Mrs. Doubtfire. That's all I know.
Oh, man. But yeah, so we got some positive feedback on the last episode. I thought it was pretty awesome. So one thing that we did mention on the last episode is our Mists of Pandaria beta giveaway. So originally, we asked you to send us an MP3 of you saying something in French to be entered into the draw for the beta key, but... nobody did that because it's apparently either hard to speak French, hard to record yourself, or hard to email. I'm not sure which. But anyways, so we're going to change the rules a little bit. We're going to flip it around and say you can send us a message on your social media platform of choice or, of course, as always, our forums, and just tell us that you're interested in being entered into the draw, and we're going to do just that and give it away next week.
Mm-hmm. And as punishment, I am going to speak the rest of this episode with a French accent.
Oh, no, is that what that was?
I'm just kidding. No, I'm not. I'm sorry, Greg.
Good.
It was a joke.
But yes, we are sorry, Greg. We would love to give the listeners more time, but with Miss Pandaria coming out in about a month, we've got to get the show on the road. So next week, look for our beta key giveaway and make sure to get your name in by Tuesday? Tuesday.
Sure.
Why not?
I don't know. Tuesday, whatever. We're flexible.
Yeah, I'll update the post on the forums. So that brings us to what we are playing, which I have been playing a whole lot of WoW, but that's kind of old news. So Ryan, why don't you talk about the other? This is like totally MMO week.
I know.
Out of nowhere by accident. So why don't you tell us about Guild Wars 2?
I started playing with the early access. Anybody who pre-purchased it got in Saturday morning at 3:00. I stayed up till probably like 2:00 and then went to bed, and I laid in bed for about a half hour and thinking, man, if I just power through for another half hour, I could play. Originally we were going to play on Dragonbrand. Paul the Swickard had suggested that server, but I had some buddies.
I love how I'm just putting people's nicknames in the middle of their names now. Paul the Swickard.
Yeah, it's normal. I mean,
love it.
It's normal to me. He got into Dragonbrand, but I had some buddies who started earlier than me and couldn't get into Dragonbrand. The servers are kind of a mess. I mean, the MMO's brand new, so we'll get to that later. But TGI, the Gamers Inn, we're focusing on Anvil Rock. Or, you know, you can be on any server. I mean, it's Ryan who's playing Guild Wars 2. Let's not get too serious here. But I started a Char, which is kind of this mix between a Tauren and a Worgen, if you can kind of picture
that.
Okay.
Not at all, but...
Well, okay, like, it's funny, it's really hard
like
to not...
Wolf.
Yeah, well, it's big like a Tauren, but it has sort of a wolf-like nature to it. It's a big Tauren-like animal. It's really hard to explain. It was the only, like, non-human character that you can choose from. The races, sorry. You have your two human races, one being a Nord-type character and another just being a standard human. Mm-hmm. And then you have your weird-looking alien gnome things, which are creepy as hell. And then you have your, like, wood elves, which are also creepy as hell. They're, like, these wood creatures who they're like covered in leaves and stuff, and but the char were the coolest, you know. They're the big baddies. They kind of look like the big animal types.
So is that it then? Five races?
Yeah, five races. Yeah, five races. You can have
that. Doesn't seem like very many.
It's not really. I mean, I don't know how many were in the first Guild Wars, so I'm kind of flying blind with this game, but I could have sworn that the old game had more than five.
Mm-hmm.
Having only played pretty much a day straight, I haven't really come across any races, any other races in the game that could be playable races. You know how in WoW you would run into a race in the game and think, oh yeah, you could have characters based around the goblins or whatever, you know, that could work. The game is utter chaos. It's, and in a good and bad way. The good way is that the game kind of runs on a public quest sort of setup. You have your story quests, which progress the story and have cutscenes and dialogue, and it's like instanced little segments where you go and do a bit of story and come back. But the public quests are these is how you progress between story quests, so how you level up. So you can actually complete the level or the story quest. And basically you're presented with a map, and then there's these hearts on the map. And when you go to those hearts, you're trying to earn these people's loyalty by doing quests for them. So when you go to that area, there'll be a list of things you can do to increase this bar to get loyalty with them.
Okay.
And you don't have to accept the quest. You just have to be in the area. And everybody around you is doing the same thing. So having played Saturday morning, first day of the launch, I'm running around to this dude who wants me to, you know, collect stuff or kill stuff, and I'm doing it with like 30 other people. And I don't know if you probably haven't experienced this yet, but
not at all.
When Mists of Pandaria comes out, you'll know what I'm talking about, where you'll be playing with everybody at the exact same time, and it's...
Well, yeah, but even when Mists of Pandaria comes out, my characters, like, we just hit, well, we hit 36 last night. I think now I'm almost 37, but we're going up a level or two a night and, like, playing crazy amounts of WoW. And I don't think there's any, like, there's no way that we're going to be up to Mists of Pandaria levels. Like, so we're not going to have level 85 characters by the time it rolls out. So... by the time we level up our characters, it might be a few weeks after Mists of Pandaria is launched. So I don't think we're going to have this problem.
Okay, well, then unless you roll a panda, I guess. If you did roll a panda, you'd experience this. But in this game, you want more people there. Because the more people that are there, the easier it is to actually get that bar filled. And I mean, stop me if I'm confusing or missing pieces, because it is different. It's not... your typical MMO
setup. So basically, if they say, please kill 30 pigs in this field, then you go run into the field with 30 other people, and if you each kill a pig, then it finishes the quest.
Essentially, right? Yeah. There is no, like, number attached to it. It's just like a... think of it as a rep bar, I guess.
Right.
And occasionally when you do these public quests... an event will spawn, a random event. So say one event was, we're cleaning up this like bog and we're like picking traps up and we're killing mobs. And all of a sudden this guy appears and he says, you people are doing the wrong work. I am going to destroy this bog. And then all these tar monsters start coming up and they're like a couple levels above your character. And it helps to have a group of people there, because if you were on your own, these things would kill you. Right. And by completing these random events, you get, you know, more experience, gold. There's a ton of currencies in this game. I mean, it's so hard to keep track of. And that's what I mean. That's the bad part of the chaos, is that with a new MMO, you're confused by everything. Like, I was confused as to what I was supposed to do in between quests. Like, it's so different. You have to, like, grind, basically. Mm-hmm. And, you know, items was another thing that kind of confused me. Like, in combat, you don't choose your 1 through 5 spells. You actually, those are changed based on the weapon you're holding.
So
no matter what class you are, I believe, if you're holding a sword, you'll have different, you'll have the same spells. And you earn them by using the spells or whatever. But it's interesting because it'll be easier to shift from class to class because you'll have the same...
You already have those things unlocked.
Exactly, the same 5 spells across your class. Now, there are class-specific spells, but again, I've only hit level 12, so I haven't really got into that. Mm-hmm. But it's got some interesting little features, like I said, like moves based on the weapon you're holding. The public quests and the events are cool because you can just... It encourages you to group up with these random people. The one thing that I haven't really enjoyed is that in the news they've said they've tried to make this game playable with your friends easy as possible. It couldn't be any different from that. Like, it is hard to play with your friends. First of all, you have to choose a home server. Mm-hmm. So you can only play on one server, which is super frustrating. If especially for you with WoW, you've created how many alts on how many different servers?
Oh, I see what you mean. I thought you meant your main character couldn't jump between servers. And I was like, well, yeah, that's kind of standard. But you mean you pick a server and all your characters are on that server and you can't create alts on other servers.
Exactly.
Yeah, because like right now I have my character that I created when I very first started. It's only like a level 6 blood elf. And that's on like some... I don't even know what the name of the server is, but it's like basically made for new players. Mm-hmm. And then I have my main on Argent Dawn, and then I have another one on Dark Spear. Mm-hmm. And then I'm going to make one on Earthen Ring, and then I'm going to make another one over on another Alliance one on over on another server. So, I mean, like, I'm going to have 5 or 6 characters, and each one of them is on a different server. Like, I don't have double characters on the same server, so...
Yeah, and I mean, I understand this is a free-to-play MMO in the sense that you buy the game and you have, you know, subscription. But you're given 5 character slots for one server, so which is fine. But the mere fact that you can't, like, I can't roll on Dragonbrand. I have to use a world transfer chip to transfer my server home to a different server. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I can play with Paul now, but now I can't play with my other friends. Not my
right.
Paul is my friend, sorry if you're listening. but all I'm saying is it's really confusing. Now, that being said, the game, I've read about guilds and stuff. You can have a guild and have it be worldwide, like the entire all across all servers. It
all
sort
servers,
of works
yeah.
as you have like a corporation guild, and then you have like different franchises at different servers,
right?
So we could start a Gamers Inn Guild on Anvil Rock and have Paul be the Dragon Brand chapter if he wants to do that, or if we
even
have enough people to start a guild. So that's interesting, and I can add anybody to my friends list. Like, I can add Paul to my friends list even though we're on different servers, and there are abilities to play together, but I haven't come across that yet. I mean, I played literally Saturday all day and then all night,
So how many hours have you put in so far to get to level 12?
That's a great question. Most of it's a blur, but I spent maybe like 10 hours, I guess.
Okay, well, that's pretty comparable to WoW. I've found so far that like on my lower level character, pretty much I'm doing about a level an hour.
That's not
give or take. Yeah.
Yeah, and I don't...
Obviously, some levels are faster than others, but I'd say I'd put in about 20 hours into my my alt alliance character. And she's level 19 now, so...
It's going to get slower, I mean, as you level up, but...
Yeah.
And the same with any MMO, there is that curve, but most of these problems... Like, those problems are just based on design, and I don't know whether they'll change it or it will require a subscription to change it, because I can understand them needing a subscription to manage like having all those characters in different servers. But The one really annoying thing, and this could be due just to the popularity of the game right now, but there are overflow servers. So even though I'm playing with four of my friends on Anvil Rock, and in a party with them, I can be in the exact same spot as my friend but not see them because I'm in the overflow server. And how that works is that you have your home servers, and every time you you port to a different location or hit a loading screen, basically, they check the home server. If there's too many people there, you're kicked to the back of the queue into the overflow server. So I can't see or play or quest with my friends every time we transfer to we hit a loading screen.
Wow. How often do you hit loading screens? Because, I mean, like, wow, it's, like, hardly ever.
Well, you wouldn't normally hit it, but there's fast travel in this game.
Yeah.
So rather than going to, like, you know, running to a town and going to a flight path person, you just open your map and click, pay some gold, and you're transported there.
Right.
So that's pretty much every time you hit a loading screen or every time they load. Like, cutscenes are sort of, like, literally cutscenes where they stop the action and two characters come up and there's like dialogue, and that's a loading screen as well.
I see.
Now,
basically every time that you want to advance your main story with your friends, there's a possibility you could get kicked off your server and then not be able to see them anymore.
Exactly. And there would be
terrible.
Yes. And we were very upset in the sense that, like, every time I wanted to quest my buddy, it'd be like, okay, we finally found each other. We're finally on the same server. And then, you know, one of us would load and it's like, oh, crap, now we have to wait even longer. And it takes, like, 30 minutes to get back into the regular queue we were finding.
Really? And I do know that, yes, it was, you know, pre-launch and everything else, and it's almost like a beta, you know? Like, it's not the actual launch of the game. It's for everybody that's pre-purchased and, you know, like, so they want to see how their server load goes and all this kind of stuff. But still, like, oh my god, that seems so broken.
Like, the design of it is really frustrating. And again, like, this will probably be ironed out in the next couple weeks. But,
well, yeah, I'm sure they'll patch it, but it's frustrating.
Yeah, but I mean, the positives of the game, it looks fantastic. The sound and music is great. I haven't muted the music and started playing podcasts yet. That's usually your first sign that you're getting sick of the music. You know, as a subscription-free MMO, it's good. It's a lot of fun, and the combat's different, and the quest setup encourages you to play with random people. And the game is structured very well in the sense that when you have 50 people on screen doing the same quest, the game holds up. Like, it doesn't miss a beat.
It's a bit laggy, and oh, well, that's good.
Yeah. So there are parts of the game that are really fantastic, and I'm looking forward to connecting with some of our fans that are playing. If on the forums, on our forums, we have a thread for Guild Wars 2, and people are posting their profile IDs. So if you guys want to connect and start playing, I've been in there. I got Greg added, and I think Warcrusher is on there as well, and Paul. So we're just starting to get everybody organized, and hopefully in the next couple of weeks we can get some questing together.
Yeah, I'm hoping to pick it up in the next couple of weeks, so just have to wait till after the first of the month.
Yeah, and I mean, with Mists of Pandaria coming soon, I wouldn't blame you for not picking this up, because that's... You want to hit 85, right? Like,
yeah. Which brings me, really, to what I've been playing, which is just, wow, like, crazy. But, yeah, I've just had 2 days off from work, and I pretty much spent all day yesterday playing WoW. I made the decision, since they made the Auction House app, which, oh my god, I love. It's so addictive. It's more addictive than WoW itself. Like, I'm now going into WoW with my character and just, like, farming leather and farming, like, iron and stuff, just so I can go and do more stuff on the Auction House. Like...
Yeah, the WoW Auction House has sort of ruined every other Auction House setup in every other game for me, because it's so simple and easy to use.
Mm-hmm.
And the mere
app
fact
is just, oh, fantastic.
So the app is really good then. I've never used it.
Oh man, so much fun. And it's like, it's easy to use and everything's all just there, and you can, like, create all your auctions, and there's options within the app to say, like, do you want to undercut the lowest auction by, you know, one bronze or one copper or whatever it is, or like 1%, or do you want to match the lowest price, or, you know, all this kind of stuff, or you can always enter your own. And it's just, it's super fast, super quick. Like, you can create like 20 auctions in like 2 minutes, and like of all of different stuff. And then when you sell stuff, you just go into My Auctions and then Sold Items, and there's a whole big list, and then there's just a button you click at the top that's like, collect gold, and then it's all sent to your account. So, like, I mean, I went from my main character having like 20 gold to, I think I'm up to like almost 300 gold in like 2 days. Because, like, all the leather and all the metals and stuff are just selling like crazy. Because no one who's level 85 wants to go back and mine copper.
Mm. Oh, so, man, I can attest to that. I mean, when I was playing in Wrath, one of the worst things you can do in World of Warcraft is to take a profession all the way to 300 or 350 or whatever it was, and retrain for a different profession.
Mm.
It is the most annoying thing ever. And people like you on the auction house save those people's
butts. Did you just say you people?
You know what? It's been a trend with me, and I'm not going to stop as long as we're not talking about anything
too controversial.
Exactly.
But yeah, I mean, well, I was I did have skinning and leather working as my professions, and then I ended up dropping leather working because I think I only got it up to like 20 or 25 or something, and I was like, you know what, I can just make a whole ton more money and then pay somebody to make me stuff if I just train in mining instead. And so now I have skinning and mining, and god, I don't even know what I'm gonna do with all my gold. I have so much,
you know. It's funny,
I have so much compared to what I used to have.
People don't realize that, like, that's usually the first thing people do is figure out, okay, what class am I? I'm a hunter. I can wear leather. All right, skinning and leather working. But people don't usually come to the realization that you should pick two gathering professions sell.
When, I mean, like, the skinning is really, really easy because most of the quests are like, go kill 10 of these things. And so I'm like, okay, and as long as it isn't like, as long as it doesn't pretty much walk on two legs, with the exception of like the dinosaurs, but like as long as it's not too human-like, you can skin it. So, I mean, most of the quests I have to do anyway result in me having all this leather in my bag, and then when I'm running around from quest to quest, I'm passing all these mines. So it's not even out of my out of my way to do this, and then I just fill up my bags with all these materials, and I'm like, well, I can't make anything, but you know what I can do is I can sell 5 pieces of light leather for like 5 gold, and I'm laughing. So I'm having a great time. So I think I mentioned last week that I created another character, but what I didn't mention last week, because it only just happened yesterday, is that I joined my first guild. Yay!
Sweet.
I'm doing a dance.
Oh.
I have a new guild dance.
I was pausing for effect.
So yeah, I'm really excited. It's actually a guild with Sales Geek, who's often in our chat room. And it's a lot of fun. And there's only like 14 of us in it or something. But it's a good fit for me because I'm totally new to all of this, to just the whole MMO world. And I don't know all the lingo. And so I'm just leveling up my little low-level character, and so there's people for me to play with, because there's all different levels of people in the guild. There's, like, most of them are level 85, obviously, but some of them are low like me. And so, like, I mean, they have all different professions, and it's this whole other cool, welcoming kind of world that is just like, well, I now have 14 WoW friends that I didn't have before, and it's exciting. But it's not intimidating like, say, joining AIE, which is, you know, thousands of people, the biggest guild in WoW kind of thing. So I'm really enjoying it. There's so many of these, like, new things that I've learned in the last, like, 2 days about WoW. And I was talking to someone on it was actually in WoW the other day. And they're like telling me what add-ons I should get and stuff. And I'm just like, so I went to curse.com. Is that right?
Curse add-ons, yeah.
Yeah. So, and I was like, I was looking through stuff, and I was just like, oh my god, there's so much I don't know. Like, I'm looking at all these, like, UI-changing add-ons, and they're, like, talking about all these different things, and it's like, oh, and if you, like, get this add-on, then you can hover over your gear, and then it's, like, this whole, like, screen-long thing of all these different stats and stuff, and I was just like, I think I know what that one stat means. Everything else, I have no idea what that stands for. So I still have a lot to learn, but oh man, am I having fun. It's so complicated. Oh, you know what else I did?
What,
totally
Jocelyn?
By accident. Is I did an instance.
Oh.
Totally by accident.
Which because one?
The one that Joel and I tried to do before that we ended up dying because there was just the two of us and we were like level 20. Mm. When you go into it, there's like this big purple thingy that you walk through and then there's the loading screen. So this one just kind of looked all white and cloudy. So I was like, oh, this totally isn't an instance because like instances are purple because right. That's the only one that I've seen before. And it was Wailing Caverns.
Oh, okay. Yes, I hate that one.
So I actually ended up dying, but I didn't die because I went in and by the time I figured out it was an instance, which was pretty much when I hit the first bad guy and he was elite with the dragon thing all around his picture.
Right.
And so I was like, oh, I probably shouldn't be here. But I tried anyway because I'm a hunter. So I had my pet. So I pretty much just used my pet like a tank and just kept healing my pet and then like hurling arrows at the dudes. And it actually worked really well. I got all the way to the third of five bosses, or the third of four bosses. And I almost killed him. But then he turned into this, like, big, huge snake, and I was like, ah! I actually, like, jumped back from my computer, and I was like, what is going on? And then in that just little amount of time, he totally gained the advantage, and I was like, damn it!
You know, we need to get a five-man going, like a five-man group. Mm-hmm. For an instance, I mean, yeah, what you can do is you can solo instances. Basically, it sounds like that's what you were doing with your hunter pet, right?
Yes.
Yeah. And I mean, you can do that. Elites, I think, once you get 10 levels above, they sort of become, you know, manageable.
Totally. I had to be careful. I could do two at once of the level 19s, but I had to make sure that I killed all the elites around the boss before I pulled the boss because I almost died on the second person because I didn't do that. There was still one druid left and then the boss. And so, yeah, I almost died. But I think she was like a level 20 or 21 druid. And anyway, so I almost died. But then I didn't. And the other thing I realized, I probably should have had healing potions or bandages or some kind of healing. I totally didn't have any kind of heal. I could heal my pet, but I couldn't heal myself. So then I usually would get in these big, huge battles and then just have to stand and wait while my health regenerated. So it took a lot longer than it should have.
Yeah.
It's very poor planning.
Well, I mean, instances are more fun when, I think we've been over this before, but instances are more fun when you're playing with other people and just wait until you get to the point. Like, instances in World of Warcraft up until maybe level 40 don't really require a lot of strategy. Now, I could be pissing some people off here, but I'm pretty sure once you get to higher levels like 80 and whatnot, or maybe even 60, you're going to start doing instances where it requires coordination, where you'll have like your main tank saying, okay, I'm going to tank this. I need the rogue to do this. I need this person to do that. And there's actual coordination. It gets fun because you're given your own little subtask, right?
And that's what really actually is intimidating to me about instances is that like you go in a group and you have your specific thing to do and it's all planned out. And it's like, if you don't do that thing, everyone is screwed. And I'm just like, I don't want to be Leroy.
Yeah. I've done a 25 man, before where there's 25 people counting on you. And if you die, it's like, you know, people have mods set up and whatnot, depending on, to kind of aid the group. So we did this one instance where it was like, it was just a dragon fight and there was 25 of us. And like, if somebody dies, it'd be like, so-and-so got infernoed by the dragon. And it's like, oh man, I better not die or I'm going to be publicly shamed.
Yeah.
So it's easier for us DPS folk, but if you're a healer or a tank, it's, you can have the blame put on you a lot easier, but,
Which I'm absolutely loving my Draenei healer. I think she's awesome. She's a shaman. Mm. So much fun. She looks awesome. And I mean, I hate the story. Like, I know everyone was joking around with me and saying, oh, you picked the space goat. And I was like, why are you calling it that? Oh, wait, because they're actually like space goats.
Actually, I could get into that. I think their story is quite interesting, being from a different dimension and whatnot. But
their story wasn't too bad. like the how they got there, the other dimension kind of thing. That was kind of interesting. But it got pretty old pretty quickly with the, oh no, our crystals are corrupting the world. And, you know, like, I was gonna like, oh, okay, can I get out of this starting area now? Because you're boring.
Yeah, it's a tough story to tell compared to, like, the easier ones, like the orcs or the goblins even.
True.
Or the blood elves, for that matter. The blood elves have a pretty good history and story between being with the Alliance and going to the Horde and all that jazz. But, you know, yeah.
But yeah, so I think that pretty much wraps up my WoW talk for today. But yeah, that was all I was doing when I woke up this morning and I was like, oh no, maintenance for like my entire day. Oh no, I'm so upset.
Yeah, that was a big thing when we were in college. We were still playing WoW, and Tuesdays would always be the day where it's like, well, I guess we better go to class. Mm-hmm. You know, it's a good thing we have all our classes on Tuesday because there's maintenance and we can't play. Yeah. So,
yeah. Tuesday was my Sunday this week, though. So yeah, that's upsetting. Too bad. Anyways, shall we move on to quickfire news?
We shall.
All right. So, DLC, DLC, DLC! Part 1, Mass Effect. Mass Effect 3's DLC, titled Leviathan, is now available for $10. This DLC will add a new quest, which apparently changes your ending. Again. Not the way the extended cut did, but it will add subtle references to the ending to reflect your completion of the DLC. Was that so hard? Although there is an autosave just before the Cerberus mission, a full playthrough is necessary to see all the changes made by this content. It may be time for me to pick up my controller and play it all again from the very beginning. I'm actually shocked that I've held off this long.
Torchlight 2 release date to be announced at PAX. Runic Games is going to be at PAX Prime this weekend, and they've got some big news for us. On the morning of August 31st, this Friday, we're going to know the release date for Torchlight 2. Also, a bunch of people in Seattle will get to play the game, but more importantly, release date. Keep an eye on your social media feed Friday for the info, as I'm sure we'll be tweeting up a storm.
Blizzard patches World of Warcraft ahead of the next expansion. Today was patch day. Patch 5.0.4 brings big changes ahead of the launch of Mists of Pandaria, including account-wide pets and mounts, a complete revamp of the talent system, and changes to classes. Included in these changes is something very exciting for me as a low-level player. Cross-realm zones are here. That's harder to say than you'd think. When playing in areas that are underpopulated, such as low-level zones, you will be able to play with more people from other servers to get more of the MMO experience. This was the biggest thing I complained about when I first started playing WoW, is that I had no one to play with in this big, huge, empty world. Looking forward to jumping into this weekend. Full patch notes can be found on Blizzard's website.
There's a new CEO in town for OnLive. Steve Perlman is now the former head and CEO of OnLive as he exits to focus on other projects. This news comes days after being announced that Perlman would stay on after the restructuring. More interesting, however, is that venture capitalist Gary Lauder will take over as the new owner of OnLive, the very man that saved OnLive from the brink of bankruptcy. After the usual classy Steve is a great guy speech, Lauder had this to say about his new company. The new OnLive is emerging with greater financial security and a brighter outlook on the future. OnLive is now positioned to execute against longer-term projects with our breakthrough technology products and services. Here's hoping Lauder can steer this ship into profitability.
Guild Wars 2 hits 1 million copies sold. Guild Wars 2 launched today, and with that we get pre-launch sales numbers. More than 1 million people pre-purchased the game and were able to begin leveling characters over the past few days. According to the game's publisher, NCSoft, the number of concurrent players online this weekend topped out at over 400,000. All those players caused some login and server issues, as we discussed earlier, and the trade network still isn't live, but after Diablo 3, we're all used to this now, right?
Right. The Secret World sells 200,000 copies. As part of their most recent financial report, Funcom admitted that The Secret World has not lived up to their expectations since its launch in early July. However, Funcom states these poor sales are not due to technical issues or difficulties, but rather reviews and news about competing games. The Secret World received some mixed reviews, and Funcom noted that these poor critiques impacted sales of the game significantly. The week before The Secret World launched, ArenaNet announced that Guild Wars 2 would come out August 28th, and let's not forget Mists of Pandaria just a month after that. It's not easy being an MMO, but Funcom remains committed to TSW and is planning several initiatives to attract more players. Wait, do I hear... What do I hear? Oh, I think it's the internet collectively screaming, free to play!
DLC, DLC, DLC! Part 2, Skyrim. All the speculation around Skyrim from a little while back has been confirmed as Hearthfire DLC was officially announced today. At first I thought it was still a ways off with a release date of September 4th, but then I realized that's actually next week. Tuesday, in fact. An announcement trailer has been released, and this time the DLC doesn't focus on combat so much as it focuses on living in Skyrim, as the name suggests. You'll be able to purchase land, build your own house, and adopt children. You will also be able to do things like plant a garden so that your supplies will be on hand much more readily should you be an alchemist or a cook. This DLC will set you back 400 Microsoft Space Points and, again, is exclusive to the Xbox 360 for now.
Dead Island Studio taking on fantasy with hack and slash gameplay. Techland announced via a development blog that they will be working on a new hack and slash first-person game codenamed Project Hell. The project originally started out as an internal weapon mod for Dead Island, which Techland says, oh my god, acted as proof that chopping monsters frozen by magic spells using two-handed swords is brutally fun and addictive. When higher-ups at Techland dedicated more staff to the project, it went from mod to full-fledged game. Techland went on to say that we'll use our experience already gained in game development and enhanced technology from Dead Island. We believe that we can make something really unique and thrilling and share it with you. Keep your fingers crossed. If you're curious, check out sharpenyouraxes.com, where you can follow along as Techland develops this new and bloody fantasy action game.
Die, devil!
Road to Halo 4. Oops. Oh, sorry. Did you miss me?
This is the Gamers Inn exclusive Road to Halo 4 segment. As we mentioned in the past, we will be playing all the titles in the main Halo franchise, including this week's title, Halo 2, followed by Halo 3, Halo 3 ODST, and finally, Halo Reach. We will be reviewing one title every 3 weeks until the release of Halo 4. We will then be reviewing Halo 4 and capping it off with an interview with 343 Studios developer and my very close friend, Angus McQuarrie. Very exciting times here at the Inn. Also, folks, we will be in full spoiler mode for these discussions, which may include spoilers of other titles. So, Ryan, why don't you give our fine listeners an overview of Halo 2?
Will do. Halo 2 was released for the Xbox video game console on November 9th, 2004, and is the best-selling first-generation Xbox game with at least 6.3 million copies sold in the United States alone. Critical reception of the game was generally positive, with most publications loving the strong multiplayer component, which, unfortunately, we were unable to play. Halo 2 was later ported to PC as a Windows Vista exclusive in 2007. Halo 2 opens with the trial of a Covenant elite commander aboard the Covenant's mobile capital city of High Charity. The elite is stripped of his rank, branded a heretic for failing to stop the humans from destroying Halo. At that same time, on Earth, the Master Chief and Sergeant Johnson are commended for their actions at Halo. That's how that thing starts.
So one of the things that you mentioned in your first little blurb there is that the multiplayer is no longer available. So I wasn't really paying that much attention when I was just trying to load up the game. So the first thing it asks you, oh my god, I did not just do that.
Let me ask you a question.
The first thing it asks you is to pick a profile. So you have to make a profile for Halo 2. And then it says, do you want to sign into Xbox Live? Pick your Xbox Live profile. So I did that, and it kept throwing me an error. And then, like, so you just click OK for the error, or cancel, or whatever the button is. And it throws you right back to the main Halo menu. And I'm like, okay, well, that's weird. I check my internet connection. I check everything else, and everything's fine. So I'm like, what the heck is going on here? I went through that, like, 3 or 4 times, and I was this close to being like, well, screw this. I guess it just doesn't work. And then the little Ryan voice in the back of my head was like, Jocelyn, there's no multiplayer. Don't sign into Live. And I was like, oh, okay, Ryan.
Well, that would explain why I blacked out this afternoon. I mean, geez, I wonder what happened.
So then I didn't log into Live, and then I was able to play Halo 2. So crisis averted, people.
Yeah. I mean, there is multiplayer actually in the, I found this out, but I never really launched a game, but on the PC version, the servers are still up, but not very full. I mean, it is a very old game, so.
Yes, as I discovered today.
Yes. Well, I'm going to let you start.
Well, my first impression of Halo 2 was that it was basically the same as Halo 1. Mm-hmm. So I pretty much played about an hour of it, I guess. And I did really enjoy the opening cinematics where you got the, like you mentioned, the story of the Covenant Elite as well as the story of Master Chief. Mm-hmm. So that was really cool that they were showing you both sides of the fallout of the exploding of Halo. So I thought that was really cool. And then I got into it and I was like, oh, what do you know? I'm on another spaceship. Oh, what do you know? I'm crash landing to a planet again. Oh, I know how this goes. So I was like, I wasn't really impressed by that. And then I went in and then it kind of felt like Call of Duty, because then you land on Earth or, you know, crash on Earth or whatever. And then you're kind of running through this city and you're with a bunch of like human Marines and you're running through a city and going around corners. And I was just like, oh, this is like Call of Duty. It's not even in space anymore. So I wasn't really impressed and I got kind of bored and I gave up. And then I went on Twitter, and I was like, I gave up. And then after some not-so-subtle urging from my co-host, I picked it up again.
Oh, I didn't know that.
And, yes, yeah, so I did pick it up again. I played a little bit further. I think I played about 3 hours altogether.
That's good.
So I got to the point where you get to play as the Covenant guy, which was actually pretty cool. And you got to use the energy sword thing.
That's the exact... Yep, that's right.
Yeah. So I was super excited. I was like, oh, what do you know? Pew! Stabbing people. Ugh! I was actually making all the sounds. So, that was kind of fun. But, I mean, it's still... it was not a bad experience. It was definitely better combat. There were more weapons. The story I thought was better than the first one, but I mean, I could have gotten the same experience if it was like a Halo movie, because I found the story really interesting and I wanted to see where that was going, but I didn't necessarily really want to play the game. So actually what I did is I went to YouTube and I watched all the cinematics. And so I got the story. I totally know what happens. And I don't feel like I've missed out on anything by not playing the game. Like, I drove the Warthog, I drove a tank, I drove one of the flying ghost things, and I got to play as both Master Chief, and I got to play as the Covenant dude, and what else did I do?
It sounds like you hit a good
amount.
Pretty
much, I think I hit all the points. So.
And you also got, like, a couple of my favorite... especially if you got to the Arbiter, you played like two of my favorite moments in the game, you know. It's like permission to leave the ship. It's like, well, where are you going? It's like giving the Covenant back their bomb. And I'm like, yes, totally remember that moment. And I loved it.
See, and I don't have any of that nostalgia. So it wasn't pulling me in, because for me, like all the stuff that you talk about how much you love playing with your friends and how great the story was and the combat was all new and this was all great back in the day, I don't have that. What I have is with that, I have that exact same nostalgia and memories and whole lot of awesome experiences tied to Mass Effect. Mass Effect is my Halo. So, you know, I have the, oh, I play multiplayer with my friends all the time and it has such a great story and oh, the graphics are great and the combat is really cool and blah, 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 blah. And I get all that excited about Mass Effect. And going back and playing Halo, I can totally see how, you know, years ago that would have been awesome. And I, like, looking back on Mass Effect, you know, 8 years from now, I'm sure I'll have the same feelings about Mass Effect that you have on Halo, like now with Halo. So.
Yeah, and I'm very clouded by nostalgia, and when it's like, I'm trying to think of an example. I was thinking about this today after we were talking on Twitter and then via direct message and kind of having this, I don't know, a discussion, we'll say, about, you know, what it meant to play these games, and you made some valid points about, you know, this is an 8-year-old game and this is the way I see it, and no matter what I do, unless I go back in time and totally erase the last 8 years of my life, you're not going to have the same experiences that I'm going to have.
Well, exactly. It seemed like everything I went to do was just a little bit off, and I was kind of like, even the like tutorial when it pops up. Obviously, it's an Xbox game, so all of the like turn your flashlight on now by pressing the white circle. I'm like, my controller doesn't have a white circle because I'm playing on a 360. So what the F? So then I just mash all my buttons and I'm like, where the heck is my flashlight? You know, and eventually I realized that, you know, left bumper is white button and right bumper is black button. And so I figured that out. But I was just like, oh, man, it's just like everything was just that little bit off and it just takes you right out. So
I kind of felt bad. Were you glad to go back and play a little more or are you like condemning me now?
I enjoyed the little bits that I played. I definitely played as much as I wanted to just to get the feel for the game. I think that was plenty. But, I mean, I did stop playing and then went immediately and spent an hour because there's, like, I think on YouTube it's split into 10-minute chunks and there's 8, I think. So I didn't watch the first 2 because I'd already seen those as, like, in line with my gameplay. Or sorry, the first 3 in line with my gameplay. But I took a good 50 minutes and sat and watched all the cinematics and got the whole story. And, you know, there was a little bit of gameplay thrown into the YouTube videos I watched. So I feel like I got the whole experience. And I really liked it. I thought the story was cool. I actually had to Google it at the end, though, because I was just like, am I missing another? Is there another cinematic that I missed? Like, what's going on? That didn't make any sense. And then I Googled it and they were like, the biggest criticism is the not making sense cliffhanger ending. And I was like, oh, okay.
Well, I mean, if you're going to finish the fight, you might as well finish it in its own game.
Yeah.
And it was funny because
that was why. There's this big thing where he's like, I'm going to finish this fight. And I was like, okay.
Yeah. And it's... If you were paying attention, or if you had you probably didn't have an Xbox 360 at this time, but because you got it a little later in the game, right?
I only picked up my 360, would have been a year and a half ago.
Oh, okay. So you missed the whole marketing push for Halo 3 in the sense that their major marketing was finish the fight, and that's how they advertise it. Yeah, and Bungie has gone on saying, I actually, you know, they've done interviews about this. They fully admit that they had an ending where you land on Earth and come to some sort of satisfying conclusion. But cliffhanger ending, they had to cut it. They had to ship it. Highly anticipated title. And that is the biggest problem with the game is even the campaign, it felt shorter to me. I did get through it and...
I wasn't sure if it was shorter or not because, like I said, I didn't actually play all the way through. But watching the cinematics, I felt like there was a whole lot more story. Mm-hmm. Like in Halo, it was so much just like nobody knows what the fuck is going on right now. So, you know, the actual story, there wasn't a whole lot of backstory. Like you got a little bit of it with... what's his name? They call him the Oracle in this one, but I don't think that's what they called him in the last one because you didn't get the Covenant side of the story.
Guilty 343.
Yes. Guilty Spark. Yes. So you got some of the backstory out of him, but it was mostly like he was kind of chattering away as you're walking along through the library in the first one.
Yeah, it was rhetoric. It was like it was Bible talk. You wouldn't understand it unless you were part of that like cult or religion or whatever. So. I see where you're coming from. Yeah, and from playing this game, maybe I felt it was shorter because I found that in comparison to Halo 1, one of my biggest issues with it is like, yeah, it looked great. It was remastering. But the levels still felt long and slow and kind of like, you know, okay, this could have ended half an hour ago. But in Halo 2, I felt that the levels were a little, you know, tighter. They designed a little better and... you always had a cutscene. I found the chapters ended quicker. They ended quicker. So you only, like, I thought, it's like, oh, man, if I have to do, like, 20 more minutes of this, I'm going to need a break. It's like, oh, wait, cutscene. Here we go. Mm-hmm. So, but anyway, that was
like,
just me.
In terms of level design, I felt that Halo 2 was better. Mm-hmm. But I still felt that, like, it wasn't so much, like, I felt in Halo 1 there was all this, like, copy-paste almost, you know? Like, every single room was, like, room that looks the same, and then hallway that looks the same, and then room that looks the same, and then hallway that looks the same. And I got lost, you know, or turned around because everything, like I said, looked the same. Whereas in Halo 2, I didn't quite feel like that. But I felt that there were a couple times where I was like, I'm not quite sure which way I'm supposed to go right now. And I feel like, and again, this is completely just because of all the games that I've played lately are, like, obviously newer games and have maps.
Right.
So I'm so used to being able to hit start and then just bring up a map of the level. And even if it still has, like, you know, the fog of war where I haven't been or whatever, I can still see, like, the layout of the room that I'm in and go, okay, if my character is pointing to the right, I know that I have to go left to go to the top and out that door or something, you know? So I'm so used to using that. And I'm well aware that it's totally a crutch, but I'm just so used to having that, that when games don't have it, I'm like, well, this is frustrating.
Yeah, and the only actual game that I can remember in the Halo series where they actually add a map is where it's actually truly needed, which is in ODST, where there is an open world hub game. And, you know, you kind of need that map to say, okay, where do I want to go first? Do I go here? Do I go here? And the whole city hub map is mapped out, and it's really cool. And I think you're actually going to get a kick out of that one the most. I mean, Nathan Fillion and Firefly and all that stuff.
But I love him.
Well, you know, I'm more of the, what's the other guy's name? The Baldwin dude.
Alec Baldwin.
No, he would be good in Firefly, wouldn't he?
He would have been great in Firefly.
Adam, wasn't it?
Adam Baldwin. Yeah. I'm like, I know it's an A name, but yes, Adam Baldwin. Yeah. Yes, I agree. But yeah, Nathan Fillion.
The characters.
Love me some Mal.
No, I do too. I think he would, he doesn't do enough. I find he deserves to be in more, and I don't watch Castle, so
yeah, no, Castle's dumb.
Yeah, it's like, okay, no, can't do that.
Sorry,
do
tangent, it. Tangent, come back.
Yeah, yeah,
back.
Halo 2. Characters. I mean, did you enjoy? You watched all the cutscenes, so this is going to be right on the money for a discussion. Like the Arbiter, Gravemind. Did you find the characters they added in the game, you know, kind of made it a better, like, story? Like, they added a lot of characters.
Totally. They added a lot of characters. They added a lot of backstory. I really liked seeing the Covenant side of it, because they don't even, in Halo 1, they don't even explain really who the Covenant is. I didn't realize it was all these different races. I guess, are they races? I don't really know. All these different groups, you know? Like, I'm assuming, well, yeah, the human race. So, yeah, they would be different races. So you have, like, the Grunt race, and they talk about the Grunt Rebellion, and like how the other Arbiters have come in the last little while and, you know, like straightened out all the problems that the Covenant as a whole has had. And so there's like the Grunts and the Brutes and the Elites, and there are all these different separate races that have come together. And I was kind of like, oh, I totally didn't know that.
Yeah.
I thought it was like there's aliens and there's humans. And I didn't kind of realize that the aliens had had all their little internal problems at the same time. So that added just this whole other layer to the story of Halo that I was like, oh man, this is actually really cool.
Yeah. And the prophets that you don't even see them in the first game. And
exactly.
I like the whole idea of them being like this religious, it's like, it's a religion. Like if you read well, yeah, you gathered that. I mean, but yes. In the extended fiction, they really pile it on, and you really understand, like, this is a religion, a faith-based group, and these prophets really are, you know, they're prophets. They're prophets, like the high gods, right?
I was confused by the prophet of regret, the one that came to Earth and then ended up being killed by the Arbiter on... is it on the ring? I can't remember.
Well, the Master Chief kills regret because he punches him. You actually get to punch him, and then Mercy dies by the Flood.
Yes,
but
anyways, you know what I'm saying though, that, you know, like the one that was away from the other two.
Oh yeah,
and got killed at regret. Yeah, so I was a little bit confused. I didn't realize until the very end that, because they just kept calling him like the false prophet, and then they were calling themselves prophets, and I didn't kind of realize that there were three of them, and that he had, you know, gotten more information about the ring because he found Guilty Spark or whatever, and so I didn't realize he'd kind of broken off until like way at the end. When the main prophet guy just let the other prophet guy die because of the Flood, and then I was like, oh wait, prophet three. Okay, wait, okay, I'm catching on. So, but that could have been just because I watched all the cutscenes, like cut out of the game, so right. there wasn't, you know, the content. Although it was pretty good, the YouTube footage that I watched had most of the time whenever, like, Cortana would talk to you, then that little bit of combat scene was included with all the cutscenes, so I got all those little bits of information as well, but I was a little bit lost. So what really, really lost about was the whole grave mind thing, the dude with the tentacles. I was like, what is going on here? Like,
well, that is a little tougher to come across from just based, like, I remember when I first played that sort of confused me, but they kind of established that the Flood is sort of controlled by a central being, that being like the grave mind is sort of this thing that controls all Flood. It's like a hive mind kind of thing, I guess. Right. And, basically,
so I think, yeah, I kind of got that there was this central something driving mm-hmm. the Flood. So I picked up on that, but I didn't make the leap or I didn't make the link that Gravemind was the central thing. Like, I thought there was the Flood is one thing, the Covenant is another, and the humans are another, and then this tentacle thing lives in the bottom of the lake of Halo randomly. And for some reason has just, you know, got Master Chief and the Arbiter and is just talking to them and being like, look, I'm this big oozy thing that's been living in the bottom of the lake, and I've seen you guys fighting, and I've had enough. So work out your differences, and we can move on.
Oh, yeah, I can see that jump. I can also see, like, people singing that on the bottom of the lake in a hole on a log and a mole on a frog on a, you know, and then eventually you get to Gravemind. But I don't even know what that song's called. It just popped into my head.
Know.
you know what I'm saying? But
yeah.
I can see that jump, but I don't even, like, again, I'm clouded by nostalgia, so it's hard for me to say, but coming from a first person, it could be different. But I think how it really works is that, you probably gathered this, that he grabs the two of them and says, like, you know, you two... we have the same enemy, and that enemy is the Prophet. Like, you know that they're trying to kill everybody. You know they're trying to kill everybody, and that everybody is my food source. So you go and stop them. But yeah, I can see that being like, you know, because he doesn't even look like the Flood. He's just a bunch
of
tentacles.
Look like the Flood. Exactly. And the other thing that I didn't understand, and the reason that I didn't piece him, like I didn't group him with the Flood, is that he does this weird light flashy thingy, and then all of a sudden, you know, Master Chief is in one spot and the Arbiter is in another spot. Why doesn't he just do that with the Flood? You know, like, just zap his little minions everywhere, and then all of a sudden, oh, the Flood's everywhere and there's nothing we could do, and now we're all dead.
That's a good point. somebody call Bungie. Get Bungie on this.
See, everyone should consult me, and I will just point out holes in stories. That should just be my job. Somebody quick, pay me for that. It's like quality control.
Exactly. And when you were watching these cutscenes, were you watching the Xbox or the PC version? Do you know?
I don't know.
Oh, okay. Because I was going to say, I originally played this on the Xbox, but I replayed it on the PC. And it has like a 3-year kind of facelift. So it looked a little better, but not as good as obviously Anniversary. But I was curious if maybe you watched these updated cutscenes, because when I was playing, the graphics weren't perfect, especially faces. Man, I mean, Bungie.
You know what's really funny though?
Faces. What
is that? Joel says the lip syncing is better in Halo 2 than it was in the Anniversary Edition.
Oh yeah. Well, I mean, I could see that based on the fact that they didn't record any new dialogue. They just made the lips flap, right? So,
mm-hmm.
But no, you're right. In Halo 2, the lip sync is pretty good, and the voice acting, the sound, and music were all a notch above the first one. I mean,
yes.
For obvious reasons. But I think the biggest one was the addition of like a movie length amount of cutscenes, right?
Mm-hmm.
And just the music they add to that stuff and whatnot. I think it was really cool.
One thing that really confused me, which I know is one of the things that was added to the gameplay, is the whole idea of dual wielding. I think I was dropping things I didn't want to drop, and I wasn't quite clear of like which I find is a problem, like in most first-person shooters, is you just kind of run up to something and it shows you like a profile of the gun, and it's like, with the exception of like the needler with the spikes sticking out of the top and the energy sword, I find it really difficult to tell the difference between the guns. So I'm like, I don't know what I'm dropping, what I'm picking up. And at least in like Call of Duty, usually you can drop stuff and pick it up again and then drop it again. And it's not a big deal. But in Halo, it's like, no, once you drop it, it's gone.
Yeah, you sort of lose it pretty quickly.
You completely lose it. There is no pick up again option. So I found that a little bit confusing. But then at the same time, I'm like, dual wielding? Yes, please.
Yeah, and especially if you're dealing with the Flood, like, dual SMGs is a godsend. I'm curious, though, based on our discussions we had actually before recording today, is the combat something that you don't like about Halo? I was curious about that.
Well, the combat wasn't bad. The mm-hmm. big problem that I had was it almost seemed like the screen, because it's a 4E video, and I'm playing on a 1080 screen, and so everything seemed a little smooshed.
Yes.
So, like, my sight, instead of being a circle, was an oval. And I found that I was, like, I wasn't quite shooting where I thought I was shooting. So I was just, I don't know, it kind of just set me off a little. So
it sounds like you're playing, well, yeah. And I mean, I wish you could have just, you easily downloaded and purchased the Halo 2 for PC, but you can't get it anywhere. It's not even on the Microsoft store.
Exactly. You can't find Halo 2 anywhere. I even had a problem, like I mentioned a few weeks ago on the show, is I even had a problem finding an Xbox version of it, and I had to go to eBay, because like I went into EB and I was like, hey guys, can I get a copy of Halo 2? Do you still sell it? And he's like, no, we don't even stock used copies anymore because it's an original Xbox game. And I was like, yeah, but it's freaking Halo. What's wrong with you? Like, yeah, talking about iconic games, like...
I can see that being an issue. That's a similar issue you had with trying to beat Legend of Zelda. You're a huge Zelda fan.
Mm-hmm.
And Skyward Sword, it's the same problem. Yes. But I'm actually really interested to play Halo 3 and have you play it and see... Because you do have Halo 3, correct? That was something
you picked
up.
Yes, I have Halo 3, yeah.
Because I think you're going to finally hit that point where you're playing gameplay that was in the last 5 years and graphics that was in the last. So you're hitting that perfect plateau, you know? So hopefully you dig it, because I think Halo 3 is where it hits its really
stride.
Solid mark. Yeah.
I think the other big difference, too, is in the story. Like I said, there's so much more story in 2 that now I'm actually a little bit more pulled into the world and I want to see what happens. I think I did the best thing I could have done with this week, where it's just like, you know, I gave it a shot and then I watched all the story. Mm-hmm. So now it's like I don't have the, oh, I had to slug through 50 hours of gameplay to get through this game. So I'm not annoyed with it. But then... I have all the story, and I saw the cutscenes, and I'm a little bit more invested. And, like, I want to know what happens to my little AI chick, and she's with the tentacle guy now, and I'm just like, oh, no.
Yeah, you abandoned Cortana.
I know. I felt really bad about that.
And I don't even think you set off the ship, which was the original reason you left her there, right? Like, I'm trying to think back.
Yeah, I think you leave her there. In case everything fails, then she can blow up Halo from Halo.
Ah, okay.
I think.
Well, yeah, and that's good. And I think with Halo 3, I believe you will dig it. But we shall see.
But I thought I would like Halo 2, too, so.
Well, I mean, from the sounds of it, based on your description of... I did not play Halo 2 on my 360, but I'm sure if I were to boot it up as an experiment and see how it looks, I would probably agree with you. And, you know, I was thinking about this today in the sense that what if someone was... Like, Final Fantasy VII is a perfect example. I'll make this quick. I had buddies who loved it, played it to death when it first came out, but I didn't have a PlayStation 1. So I never played it. I ended up buying it on the PS3 as like a PS1 classic. Have not touched it. I'm definitely afraid I'm going to play it and hate it. And it's like considered a classic. So, you know, it's the same scenario.
It's totally what I keep running into with Halo is like everybody freaking loves it. It's this iconic franchise and, you know, oh, you haven't played Halo. You totally have to play Halo. It's like, really? Probably not. If they made a Halo movie of everything up to Halo 4, that would actually probably be a better precursor to Halo 4 than going back and playing these 10-year-old games. Because instead of loving the franchise the way everybody else does, I'm kind of going into it and coming out of it going, really, guys? Really?
Yeah. And I mean, so, they did make that movie. It's called YouTube, and you discovered it. So
well, exactly. I mean, an official like live action or something.
Yeah. No, that would be pretty sweet.
Yeah. So anyways, I think that pretty much wraps up our Road to Halo 4 discussion for this week, which brings us to listener feedback, of which we don't have any. But that's all right, because we should have some next week. I'm going to take this time to give you one last reminder to send us a message on your favorite social media site in order to be entered for our draw for the Mist of Pandaria beta key. And with that, you can visit us on the web at gamersinpodcast.com, where you can find our live feed, our live chat, and our forums. You can email the show at info@gamersinpodcast.com. You can also follow us on Twitter. You can find me, Jocelyn, at GISGamer, Ryan, at RMurphy, and don't forget to follow the show at The Gamers Inn. You can also find the show on Facebook at facebook.com/TheGamersInn and on Google+. Also, don't forget to leave us an iTunes review, as it's the best way for our show to reach new listeners. So before we go, I just want to give a quick shout out and thank you to my brother Greg for creating our awesome music. You can find him on Twitter at SoundsInfluence. We would also like to thank Joel Duggan of StarCrossed Online, who drew our Twitter avatars and created our logo. You can find him on Twitter at Joel Duggan or read his comic online at StarCrossedOnline.com. Thanks for staying at the Gamers Inn, and remember to tune in next week. The Fanboys Gamers Extra Large Inn.
It makes sense. Well, video games, that got depressing.
It did. It got depressing really fast.
Well, I mean, it's for charity.
My non-gamer boyfriend, which, I got in so much shit for last week.
Oh, what'd you do?
Calling him a non-gamer, then the whole boyfriend mode comment. Why did you even bother wasting your time writing the code to do that? Just do it right in the first place, fucking idiots.
I was going to say, we could always rename our Road to Halo 4 to... Road to Jocelyn canceling her pre-order for Halo 4. Not quite as catchy.